Alice Walker won the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction and the National Book Award for her 1982 novel, The Color Purple, and she's published dozens of other novels, volumes of poetry, nonfiction, and children's books since then. But her latest book, Overcoming Speechlessness, A Poet Encounters the Horror of Rwanda, Eastern Congo, and Palestine, Israel, is something quite different. It's a heartfelt plea to speak out about injustice and cruelty wherever it occurs, and I'm very pleased to welcome Alice Walker back to our show today. Hi.
Hi.
And you describe yourself as a poet.
Oh, yes.
Despite all the other things that you've written?
Well, I started as a poet, and I have written, I don't know, 8 volumes of poetry, and the first one when I was in college. So I think of myself as a poet, definitely.
A poet who does other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a particular experience that led you to decide to write this book?
Yeah, I was in Mexico. I live in Mexico part of the time, and I was there during my sister's dying. She was much older than me, and it had been a kind of strained relationship for many years. So I assumed that when she died, and I had a priestess, and we were chanting and everything while she was dying from afar. But I had assumed that I wouldn't be devastated by her death because we had not been close for years. And to my great surprise, her death devastated me. I just couldn't believe how I felt like I had lost part of my body even. So while I was trying to recover from that experience, I turned on my computer and got news of the bombing of Gaza, and right away there was a picture of 5 little girls who had been killed, and their mother was unconscious. And because I was in this state of grief and pain and sorrow about my own sister, I was right there with this mother and thinking, now who's going to tell her when she wakes up? Who is going to tell her that she lost 5 of her daughters?
Now, this is something that I understand the grief from a blood relative, even whether you have been estranged or not.
Mm-hmm.
But we hear all the time about awful things happening in Russia recently, for example, in England and Spain, on the Israeli side of the border as well, suicide bombs and rockets dropped on people, innocent people. What about this was different, other than the fact that it happened when you were grieving for your sister?
Oh, it was something that was unfinished business for me. I had married illegally a Jewish young man. And
illegally?
Yeah, it was illegal to marry people of the opposite, as they used to say, the opposite race, when we were married in 1967.
In Virginia, Georgia?
In Mississippi, where we lived. Huh. And we were the first interracially married people there, and very much in love. And yet when I spoke about the injustice that I felt was happening to the Palestinians because the Israelis had moved in and taken their land, he immediately said that I was anti-Semitic, and this was so painful that I was unable to go into this the way that I like to go into things, with a thoroughness and just not stopping, trying to understand deeply what is happening. So part of why this has come back for me is that this was unfinished, and I feel that in life there are places that we have to look at closely. And they come to us because they are ours, that the universe or whoever or whatever gives us a perspective on that situation, whatever it is, that can be useful for everyone.
So you only see the Palestinian side as the side that's just?
Oh, no, 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 no. We're talking about a place where, we all understand that there was a Holocaust and that Jews suffered terribly. And they, some of them were resettled in Palestine. What is often lost is the realization for most people that the Palestinians had their own land there, that it was Palestine. There were Jewish people living there. But Palestine was, Palestinian. And over the years, the Israeli government has settled people all over the Palestinian land, taking it away from them. Now, they are not unique in this. This happened in this country, too. I mean, this is how, you know, the United States cavalry moved into the Indian territory and took it away from the Indians. But that doesn't make it right. And what makes it really, really upsetting is that we pay for it. And I don't really like that at all.
Well, we can't get into the whole issue of whether the creation of Israel, which was a small land that was then attacked by its neighbors, is something that is a war that should continue. At that time, Europe was doing that all over the world. They partitioned India and into India and Pakistan, leading to the loss of millions of lives. They drew artificial lines, creating Iraq and Jordan and Syria that weren't really there. In Africa, there are these arbitrary lines all over the place, leading a lot of trouble. I guess defenders of Israel would say the thing could have been resolved a long time ago, and perhaps it can be argued that intransigence on both sides has led to a situation that doesn't seem to heal, even though there have been so many opportunities to heal it.
Well, I don't think that's really fair. I think that Israel has been very obstructionist, and I think that
And you think Yasser Arafat wasn't? I mean, he was a corrupt...
Could I just finish this,
though? I'm sorry.
I think that Israel has been supported by our government, and it has also been supported by, you know, our tax dollars in creating itself in a way that some of the other countries and peoples have not. I think that our media has been very pro-Israeli, and this is not a good thing. I mean, people can disagree with, you know, what I'm saying and what other people say, but it's not a good thing when you don't tell the truth about what's happening and you don't give the Palestinian side the same kind of fairness that you give to the Israel, quote, fairness that you give to the Israeli side. It's just not good for us.
You opened the book with a description of a trip you made to Rwanda and Eastern Congo in 2006. Why did you decide to go to those particular African countries if the initial inspiration was what was going on in the Middle East?
Oh, no. I had gone to those countries years before.
Mm-hmm. Did you make that trip with the intention of writing about what you found there?
I'm a writer. I tend to write about what I witness. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not even something that I have to think about. It's just that if I see it, it's very likely it's going to show up somewhere.
You write of visiting a museum in Kigali dedicated to the victims of the 1994 Rwandan genocide. What did it display?
Well, the most striking thing was hundreds and hundreds of photographs of the people who had been murdered, and they were just the most alive, lovely, thoughtful, you know, students and doctors and gardeners and athletes and dancers, everybody. And to think that they had, you know, been basically hacked to death was part of my speechlessness. You know, the things that happen, the point of this book is that some of the things that are happening and have been happening are so horrible that we are speechless. We don't know what to say.
And it's interesting that the world did very little to stop this genocide, as it did little to stop the genocide in Europe during the Holocaust. Bill Clinton did eventually apologize for the U.S.'s inaction during a brief stop on the tarmac in Kigali Airport, but that was pretty much it.
Well, and that apology is so sad because he did know about this. He did know it was happening. I mean, we learned later that he knew that it was happening, and he was the president of the United States. He could have done something. You know, there's always something you can do. But I think also that people in power like that who permit things to happen without comment or who permit them to be, you know, mishandled and misrepresented, I think that they eventually suffer from this. So I think that you cannot get away with hiding your collusion with silence or with misrepresentation.
Alice Walker's latest book is about that silence, Overcoming Speechlessness, A Poet Encounters the Horror of Rwanda, Eastern Congo, and Palestine, Israel. The book is published by Seven Stories Press. There's also a Museum of Genocide in Phnom Penh, and I wonder about those museums. Do you think they serve a real function?
Well, this one did for me. I needed to weep, and I was able to weep. I just wept for all of us. You know, I think that unless human beings can, you know, look at what they're doing to each other and to themselves, that we don't have much of a chance. I mean, we talk all the time now about saving the planet, but unless we can save the planet, the internal planet, you know, the thing in us that keeps us green and truthful and free and loving, we don't have much of a chance.
Did you meet with survivors of the Rwanda genocide?
I did. I met with survivors of the genocide, and I met survivors of the crimes that are ongoing in the Congo. And these were some of the more heinous, disgusting brutalities against people that you can even imagine.
Well, before the troubles in Rwanda, many years before, mm-hmm. the Tutsis and Hutus lived peaceably side by side. Many of them even married each other. Have they gotten to the point where they can do that again?
Well, you know, there's always the radical, you know, dozen who will do that wherever they are and no matter what. But I think this is going to take time. And in fact, you know, they have these councils where they bring the murderers before the people, and the murderers have to stand there and be talked to eyeball by, you know, the relatives of the people they killed. And I think this is a very good thing. This is what I would like to see in the United States. I would like to see the former leaders of our country having to go and actually look at the relatives of the people that they have killed. This would be very useful.
We have done a lot of shows on what's going on in Eastern Congo, and every time I've done one, I've felt, well, gee, this is going to really turn public opinion. Of course, I don't have that kind of power. But the killing continues. It's the worst, more deaths than any war except World War II, since World War II. And yet it continues right now. I'm sure there are people being killed.
Yes, and it's because of the greed that sees the resources of the Congo as something to steal and take, and that's what is happening. So they pay people to do that.
Can you tell us the story of the young woman? Is it Jenna Rose or Jean Rose who you met in a hospital there?
Well, Jenna Rose is a Congolese woman who was attacked by the Interahamwe people who had come over the border from Rwanda. These were some of the murderers from Rwanda.
They're Hutu.
Yes, and they attacked her and you know, basically did some very horrible things to her body, killed her children, and this is an issue that I still find I can't talk about. And this is one of the reasons I wrote this. I can write about some horrors, but I cannot really so easily discuss them over the air or in public, because it is just one of those painful things, and it is why I want people everywhere to start questioning the places where they are silenced, because in those places where you're silenced, there's often something that we really need to look at in order to change it.
How did you deal with your feelings of helplessness in hearing Jenna Rose's story?
I started massaging her foot. They had cut off her leg, her other foot and her other leg, and as she was telling the story, all I could do was just creep close to her and take her other foot in my hands and massage her foot, which had started to turn black because she had been walking on it so much, and it was becoming infected. But what I loved about Jenna Rose was, as I worked my way up her leg, massaging her, she had such spirit. Even after this horrible thing had happened to her, she reached under herself and exposed her stump, what was left of her other leg. And she said, you know, massage this part too. And I just thought that was so good of her. And that's what I did.
There are Israelis like David Grossman who say that the only answer, in fact, I think Israel is kind of split 50-50 on most issues right now, but he says that he believes that the only answer to the problems there is a two-state solution, with the understanding that for quite a while, unfortunately, crazies on both sides will do everything possible to undermine it. But in time, people will see that it's in the best interests of everyone to have that.
I disagree. I disagree completely.
What do you say?
I think the only solution is a one state, a one country. I think that there used to be a country in which Arabs and Jews lived together, and I think that can happen again. And I think it's the only solution because Israel has taken so much of the land. Where are they going to really have a state? The Palestinians, I mean. I don't see it.
Well, there would be a state in the what is now called the occupied territories.
Yeah, but it would be controlled completely by Israel. The airspace, the water, everything would be controlled by them. It's not a good thing. It really isn't. And, you know, people can disagree as much as they like. But you cannot just take people, you know, take everything away from them, try to control them, and then expect that they're going to somehow have a state that's equal to yours when you have all the money.
What do you say to ordinary citizens, those people who are just living their lives trying to do the best they can and do no harm? What should they do in response to the sorts of things that you feel you want to make a call of arms about?
No, but I don't want to make a call of arms. That's just exactly not what I want to do.
Well, you want to make people aware. You want them to speak out.
I want to make a call to consciousness and to your own self. You know, I think that when our media is not truthful to us, it encourages us to tell lies to ourselves. And we start living in a fantasy. And we are disconnected from the planet, really. I mean, we're nowhere. So a good start would be to try to understand, you know, just what is happening. Follow your tax dollars. See what they're buying. I went to Gaza following my tax money.
Alice Walker will be speaking at the 92nd Street Y tonight at 8 o'clock. There's ticket information on our show page at WNYC.org. Her book, Overcoming Speechlessness, is published by Seven Stories Press. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.